We went down there to get married, and she arranged the whole thing. I mean, I didn't really do much of anything, and she had arranged for somebody to take care
of it. But you knew it was happening. It wasn't like a surprise.
I knew you were getting married. Yeah. And we went down there, and the guy that was going to marry us, he turned out to be our chauffeur. He turned out to be our photographer. He was the wedding planner, and he was a notary public.
Interesting.
And I didn't understand that, because in New Mexico, I was a notary public, but I couldn't marry anybody. And so I was really confident that even though she said we got married in Florida, when we got back to New Mexico, we weren't really going to be married.
Yeah, we're going to do this again.
But it turns out we went to the Air Force, and so she could get her Air Force ID card, and they said, "Oh yeah, you're married." I said, "Okay, that's what I wanted." But
I didn't know you could do that with a notary public. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Lead the Narrative TV, and I really appreciate you being here with us. We have in studio a whole new guest and a new person to Texas, a new person to our community here in Granbury. Well, fairly new, not as new as I am, believe it or not, been here longer than I have, but not new to the world and not new to the ideas that we talk about on Lead the Narrative, and that is there are a whole lot of collections of stories, some good, some bad, some right, some wrong, some made up. And they all impact the way our society and our culture lives. And if you're going to get engaged in society and culture and preserving what you believe to be good and right, I don't care if you agree with me or not, I want you to get engaged. Don't sit idly by and then wonder what happened. Do something about it. Tell the right stories. Tell better stories. Tell better stories better. And you'll have a whole lot more impact. And if you can get engaged in the process, put your hat in the ring. Jump out there. Get engaged in the process. And that's exactly what Skip is doing. Skip, I appreciate you being here today.
Thanks for taking time
to stop by.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me what it is that brought you to Granbury, Texas, of all places.
Well, so we lived in Florida. We sold our house in Florida. And my wife is actually from Lubbock. I was born and raised there. Went to Texas Tech. And we just looked around and we did the typical thing that a lot of people do. We got on Zillow and Realtor.com and started looking around for, literally could have moved anywhere in the United States, but kind of started zeroing in. We narrowed it down later to Texas, Colorado, New Mexico. Started looking around at different houses that were available in different communities. And of course, I'd ask my wife, "Do you want to look at this place?" "Oh no, I've been not quite enthused about living there." And that process went on for a while. And then one day, I brought up Granbury, and she said, "Yeah, I think we could do Granbury." So I said, "Let's go look at that." So we came here, spent about a week here. Went around with our realtor, saw the different venues that you have here, the different houses you have here, the lake that we have here, and we just decided this is the place for us. So we moved here, and just love it. It's absolutely the best place that we've ever been. So we're
glad. And that's saying a lot when you've left Florida, because most people look at Florida as kind of heaven before you get there.
It's a wonderful place, and I have wonderful friends down there, and we go back periodically to visit them. But I was in the Air Force for 30 years. I've traveled all over the world and all over the United States. I've seen a lot of communities. I've seen a lot of different cultures and different ideas. And I will tell you that Granbury is the best fit for us. I'll tell you till the end of my days here, which right. There's another place I'll go, but it won't be on here.
There won't be Granbury.
That's right.
So what did you do in the Air Force?
I was aircraft maintenance.
Okay. And how long have you been in Granbury?
We got here in 2021.
Okay. I was thinking you told me you've been here longer than I have, but I just want to make sure I was clear on that. So aircraft maintenance, what was your aircraft of choice or assignment?
Well, mostly B-52s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, B-52s and then the refueling airplanes, the KC-135s.
Huh?
But I spent time on a few other different airframes as I moved around and got promoted. But mostly I spent a lot of time in the old Strategic Air Command.
Yep.
And we spent a lot of time on bomber alert with our nuclear loaded aircraft, ready to go to war if we needed to. And it was an exciting time, and it was very enjoyable. The whole 30 years I was there, I enjoyed it. Although, I mean, I will tell you, I was sent to some places that weren't necessarily the hot spots that you wanted to go to for vacation, but they were obviously the hot spots in the world, so that was important for us.
I did just less than 5 years, mm-hmm. Spent some time in Honduras, a couple of years in England. As a firefighter, so I got to see a lot of those different aircraft from different angles. We supported the T-37s and 38s, the trainers, okay. Out in West Texas in Lubbock, when I first got on active duty. And then in Honduras, we had the F5s, which is the T-38 with a BB gun. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it was EF-111s and the F-15 Strike Eagles and a couple of F-4s sweep up behind them every time they take off kind of thing. But at 30 years, you saw a lot of changes in the military.
I did, yes.
Social changes, culture changes, political changes.
Yes, uniform changes.
Uniform changes.
Because
you went from the solid olive drabs to the green camos.
Yes, and everything in between, and different dress uniforms. We at one time were dressed almost like airline pilots.
Really?
We got a lot of comments about that, and I've been asked more than one time, what time did the bus leave? So it was kind of a challenge sometimes. But new leaders, new leaders that we got periodically, usually every 4 years you get a new chief of staff. Right. And whoever that chief of staff is, they usually have their ideas of how they want the Air Force to look. And they make some changes, hopefully not too drastic of a change, because it's good the way it is. It's good the way it's always been. But you need to make changes to update it to make it current,
right?
Just like you do in any form of government.
And when did you retire? How long did you actually retire?
I spent 30 years. I retired in 96.
Retired in 96. Mm-hmm. So it's changed a lot since you got out in 96.
Oh, yes.
I got out in 93. And I got out because of some of the changes, and I was like, wow, is that really military readiness that we're seeing here? But you stayed another 3 years past that and saw even more changes. Yep. And so if you went back in today, would you recognize what you did?
Well, I would. And here's the thing that I always stress about the military and about the Air Force or any branch of the military, because I stayed involved with them. I still stay involved with them. I'm a member of the Chiefs Group in Hurlburt in Florida. The people are the same. They're still motivated. They're incredibly more educated and probably more intelligent than I was when I went in. I think they're doing a wonderful job. I'll always continue to support them. I know they're doing the best that they can with what they've got. And what they've got is what we give them, taxpayers and the leaders that we have in Congress, right from the president on down. I think right now they're ready to do the job that they need to do. And we just need to continue to support them so they can continue to do that job.
Do you think we're at the level of military readiness given what's going on in the world with Russia and China and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
I think we are still the strongest force in the world and will continue to be. And I'm confident that we're ready to meet any challenge that we find, whether it's the Russians or the Chinese or whoever it might be. We've done so in the past against people that we thought was almost an insurmountable odds.
Right.
And we've always been successful. We'll continue to do that because we have that's our focus, even today.
And you mean that's the focus from the leadership down as far as training and equipment purchases and that kind of thing? Or it's the focus from the heart and soul of the guys out there, the guys and gals actually doing the work?
The good thing is it's from both ends.
Okay.
And so, I mean, and leadership, in order to be a good leader, you have to be a good follower. And so even though we were considered to be followers because the military is not run by the military. The military is run by civilians.
Right.
That's the way it's supposed to be. Obviously, we were always cognizant of what our military leaders in Congress and our military leaders in the White House are doing for us. And we continue to ask them to support us. And so far, they've always done that.
Now, how long have you been married?
My first wife died in 2003. And Brenda and I met. In fact, she's from Lubbock, and so a lot of the people that used to be at Reese Air Force Base used to work on her cotton farm.
Oh, wow.
But we met in 2005, kind of through the Chamber of Commerce in New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
And so then in 2007, we got married, went down to Orlando, down to Key West, Florida, and got married. Tell you a short, funny story. We went down there to get married. And she arranged the whole thing. I mean, I didn't really do much of anything. And she had arranged for somebody to take care of
it. But you knew what was happening. It wasn't like a surprise.
I knew
your shotgun wedding.
Yeah. And we went down there, and the guy that was going to marry us, he turned out to be our chauffeur. He turned out to be our photographer. He was the wedding planner. And he was a notary public.
Interesting.
And I didn't understand that because in New Mexico, I was a notary public, but I couldn't marry anybody. And so I was really confident that even though she said we got married in Florida, when we got back to New Mexico, we weren't really going to be married.
Yeah, we're going to do this again.
But it turns out we went to the Air Force, and so she could get her Air Force ID card, and they said, "Oh yeah, you're married." I said, "Okay, that's what I wanted." But
I didn't know you could do that with a notary public.
Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty good, you know, I've done many things. We've owned a DJ company for almost 20 years now, and I've actually DJed and videoed and shot photography at the same wedding on the same day, and actually came up with pretty good results. But I have not yet performed the ceremony at the same wedding. That's a new one for me, or driven the limo, so that's pretty good. A man of many talents.
He was.
So, kids?
I have three daughters from my late wife. Three wonderful girls that have just really exceeded every expectation I could have ever had. They're all great. One is in Colorado, one's in New Mexico, and then one's in Louisiana. And they're doing very well. And they love Brenda. They call her their bonus mom.
Oh,
which
good.
Which is really...
That's good for your heart.
It's special for her, yeah.
Well, it's got to be good for your heart, too.
Because
there's nothing worse than the clash between, especially steps.
Yeah.
I mean, they make movies about stuff like that. Most of those are not that good. Now, when you and I met, it was at an event, like a Chamber of Commerce event here in Granbury. They call that Rise and Grind.
Yes.
I think that was the first time we met. And I heard you say, I don't want to get into the politics because that's not what we're supposed to talk about here, but I am running for city council.
Yes.
And when I asked you and you said, I've been here all of 2 years, I'm thinking it's an interesting timeline. Which either tells me you come with a whole lot of leadership experience and you recognize that you have contribution that needs to be added, or you see something that you think that could be done better.
So I'll just give you my little, what I call my elevator speech, but it's an elevator speech. If you're in the Empire State Building and you're going to the top floor, it's that kind of an elevator speech.
Long elevator.
A little long, yes. So, you know, like I said, when I graduated from high school, I went in the Air Force. I stayed in the Air Force for 30 years. While I was in the Air Force, I was promoted to Chief Master Sergeant, which is the highest enlisted rank in the Air Force. And it's limited by Congress to the only 1% of the enlisted force. So I was in the top 1% of the enlisted force. You don't get to a position like that without being a leader. When I left the Air Force, I was a realtor, and I had the largest real estate franchise in eastern New Mexico. I was a partner and managing broker for that firm. You don't get to a position like that without being a leader. And then in 2009, I had an opportunity to go back to the Air Force. I'd been in every war and conflict since Vietnam, but I had never been involved in the War on Terror. And I wanted to do my part for that. So I worked to work for a company called Battlespace Flight Services. And I hired 24 maintenance technicians, and we performed maintenance on aircraft flying combat missions in places like Iraq, Afghanistan, Turkey, Africa, and thought that was an important part of my life. And that was something that if you're not a leader, you don't get to a position like that.
Well, you got to have a leader's attitude to even want to do something like that.
Well, and you know, I will tell you that public servant has always kind of been in my DNA. I did it from the time I was 18 and joined the Air Force. I think the military is one of the highest levels of public service that you can have. But then after that, after I left Battlespace Flight Services and had done my part for the War on Terror, I went to Florida and I was on the Chamber of Commerce there. Eventually, I ran for city council in Florida and was elected to the city council in Florida. Now that I'm here in Granbury, I've been on the Planning and Zoning Commission here. And I'm involved here in the Rotary Club and the Knights of Columbus with the church that I'm involved in. So I've tried to get myself embedded into Granbury as much as I can. And even though it's a short time, I'm used to moving around a lot and having to adapt to new situations and find out new things, what's going on, and what are the key opportunities for something to be done. And so that's what I bring to the city council. That's why I want to run for city council.
So your motivation behind the concept of being involved, as you said, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that military service is public service, because I'm not sure that everybody has that. A lot of the guys that I served with, I went in as a sense of duty right after high school. Served only 5 years, didn't have enough sense and didn't have enough mentors in my life to say, it's worth it, stick it out. I look back now and think, you know, I probably could have endured enough to retire and been in a different position in life. The fire department, which is where I was at, has no officers. not until the squadron commander. Mm-hmm. And so Chief Master Sergeant was our fire chief most of the time, senior master sometimes, mm-hmm. but I only served in one place where we had a master as our fire chief. If the master was the highest on the floor, it was always a civilian fire mm-hmm. chief. So it was kind of a, kind of an interesting there, but I was not good at playing the game necessary to stay out of the political highlights, if you will, of the conversations going on in the fire department. But public service is not just a, it's not just a job, mm-hmm. and it's not just a leadership role. Some people desire the public service light. As we know, there are career politicians who have never done anything else. They've mm-hmm. never had a real job. They've never led anywhere else. What they've done really well is decades of playing the game, mm-hmm. manipulating the game, manipulating the circumstances, manipulating money, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they're, I don't want to speak out of turn, but the conversations are out there and it's hard to ignore them. There are people who are already looking at what's going on in Maui going, well, it was a historical district. And you have to wonder, was there some kind of motive that what happened there could have been prevented or done better mm-hmm. or done in a different way and saved lives and property? As a firefighter, that's my first thought, save lives and property. But as a public servant, there are a whole lot of people that stand to gain by the disaster that happened. And that is a horrible thing to be true. When you talk about public service, though, you used an interesting phrase, and I'm not sure if you meant it the way I heard it, but you said, I've done all that I can to get embedded since I've gotten here. Would a better word be acclimated, or is embedded what you intended?
Well, and what I meant was to understand what Granbury, what the needs of Granbury are, is.
Okay.
And what, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here in Granbury. We've got a lot of different reasons why people come to Granbury. One of the main reasons, of course, is tourism. They right. love it. They love our Lake Granbury. They love our historic areas that we have and all the events and things that we have going on here. But at the same time, the people that live here, the permanent residents, have things that they need to have as well.
Right.
And that's the primary focus that I've always tried, is to focus on the current residents and taking care of them, provide for their health and their welfare and their safety. And that's what I tried to do on the city council. That's what I'll continue to try to do on the city council here in Granbury.
Now, I heard the mayor mention yesterday a $200 million investment that's coming to town. I don't know how much of that is public knowledge. He said it in public, so I assume there's enough of it out there that it's safe to talk about. You said you're part of the Zoning Commission already. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us anything about that project?
It hasn't come before us. It came before them, I think, probably before I was on Planning and Zoning, but it's just a development. Monroe and the bridge meet over on the, southeast corner there. Where it's all kind of wetlands and...
Right, across from the main fire station. Is that what we're talking about?
No, actually down by the bridge, you know, the when 377 goes under the
yes.
overpass.
Okay.
Kind of behind where McDonald's and Burger King are now.
Okay.
Yeah, only across the water.
Gotcha.
And it's going to be a huge development.
Is it residential? Is it commercial or all
both.
Mixed? Mixed
both.
Use.
Okay. All of the above.
All right.
It's a huge undertaking that still has a lot of development, obviously, to do.
Right.
And it'll take obviously years to get that accomplished, but they're trying to get it along and move it along as quickly as possible.
So one of the things that I've heard in the brief time that I've been here, we've only been here 5 months, but infrastructure. I mean, we've got a town of almost 12,000 people, a county of close to 80,000 people, and we have infrastructure that's probably 75 years old as far as water lines, sewage lines, cleanliness of the water, the questions about the cleanliness of the lake, etc. We do have a lot of tourism, and there are a lot of people that come here and just love how quaint the little town is. But like you said, there's at minimum, there's two sets of needs. You've got, in some ways, it's like Vegas. I have friends who own property in Vegas, and the tourists all go to the Strip. But step back three blocks on one side and you've got the homeless of LA, and three blocks on the other side and you've got million-dollar homes where people are going, I'm just trying to preserve my neighborhood. Stay off the grass, please. And they're just trying to keep their home. I think there's some of those dynamics kind of going on here as well. You have those who are in great need, mm-hmm. financially, emotionally, relationally. You have those who are like, I'm retired. I just want to have a quiet mm-hmm. little town, and please leave it my quiet little town. And then you got those who are like, it's such a cute little town, and they all want to come here. And they're like the sheep in the commercials or the cartoons from way back when the sheep was just and it's bare, and you're like, where did it all go? I feel like there are some people kind of see tourism that way, and then others are like, yeah, but that's where all the money comes from for everything we do. The tax base, the tourism, the hotels, the restaurants, the shops, they all thrive on that tourism. Mm-hmm. So how do you balance those needs and meet the concepts and necessities of forward innovation and at the same time preserve the legacy and the quaintness that makes it a tourist destination in the first place?
Well, I think that's one of the interesting parts about being on planning and zoning is, you know, we have a master plan, we have a future land use map, and we have zoning right now in place.
How far does that go? How far forward, the master plan?
I believe it's the real master plan goes out about 15 years, but then it's renewed like every 5 years. We kind of look at it and
I talked to a guy one time. He said he was on the zoning committee for Cincinnati, mm-hmm. and their plan was a 200-year plan, and this was in the 70s. I was like, how do you plan ahead 200 years? I mean, can you imagine trying to do that in the Civil War? Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. So, and that's what it does is we try to make sure that the zoning and everything is so that it's, I live in a residential neighborhood. I don't want a gas station right next door to me.
Right.
So we want to preserve the neighborhood. We also want to preserve the opportunity for development to come here and provide the services that a larger community are going to need. You know, we're going to need more infrastructure, and we're going to need more facilities that come here, more development, because the town is going to grow. If you don't grow, if you stay stagnant, or if you move backwards, the town's going to die, and nobody wants that.
Right.
So, in order to plan for development, we just want to do smart planning and make sure that we put people and facilities and the different types of developments that come here, put them in the right places in town, so that they don't disturb some of those existing neighborhoods. But yet they provide the services that the new parts of the community are going to need.
So in your running for office to be on the city council, mm-hmm. is it an open seat? Is it a contested seat? Is it a seat where you're going to have to displace someone to have that position? Or is it, we had an extra chair, let's put you in it?
No. So it's what it is, I'm going for what they call place four.
Okay.
Place four, I mean, it's services. We don't just represent a certain district or area of Granbury. We represent the entire town.
Okay.
There's actually two other opponents that I have that'll be running against me. The lady who was in the seat prior to me, Trish Burwell, has decided not to run again. So okay. It's an open seat right now,
okay.
which is the reason I ran.
So there's no incumbent battle?
No. If Trish had decided to stay in, I wouldn't have run.
Okay.
And Greg Corrigan, who's in the other seat that's open for election, is also a friend of mine. He's doing a wonderful job. I would not have run against him. But when Trish decided to drop out, that's when I saw an opening that I thought needed to be filled, and I want to make sure that somebody's in there that will take up where she left off and continue to do the good things for Granbury that she's done for us.
So aside from the accolades of 30 years military mm-hmm. service, highest rank, you know, achievable in the enlisted category, starting and running your own business after retirement. What is it about you individually that brings credibility, not just credentials, but credibility to the seat?
Well, I think I have the ability to listen to people and to deal with the facts and not so much with emotions. I know some people can get very emotional and sometimes rightfully so because this is my place and I want this for me. And sometimes we neglect to see the overall picture, the big picture, if you will. And it's important, I think, to look at what's best for the town, best for the most people, and decide based on that, and not, like I said, not on emotions, but based on facts.
Very good. Hey, if you're watching on Traverse TV, we appreciate you being here. Thanks for watching Lead the Narrative TV. Make sure you tell other people about this. This is not a conversation always about Granbury specifically, because Granbury is just one more indication of what's going on in our world. If you're not getting involved, if you're not paying attention, things will change around you, and you're going to look back and wish that you had been involved when you had the chance. If you're not invested, you can't complain about the outcome. Take the time to get involved. Take the time to be aware. And if you are watching on Traverse TV and this has come to an end, sad to see you go, but jump over to rumble.com/JLaurenNorris and you can watch the rest of the program. For those of you on Rumble, stay tuned. We're not done yet. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Lead the Narrative TV, U.S. Air Force veteran, dyed-in-the-wool patriot, believer of the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment. And I believe I need to hear your story as well. Join us on leadthenarrative.com and pitch in. Help us lead the narrative. You will either lead the narrative or you'll be led by it. So one of the things that I look at, you know, I've heard people say it, all politics is local. And so from a political standpoint, and it's hard to believe, even in a small town like Granbury, less than 15,000 people, that there is no politics in what's going on with the decisions that are being made. Sometimes that's just personal, my opinion versus your opinion, my ideas versus your ideas. Sometimes it is the unavoidable corruption of the fallen human nature that says, if I do this, I can find a way to benefit my company, my business, my family, my whomever out of that. As you see what's going on in the world around us, not talking specifically, because I'm not trying to open a can of worms for you in Granbury, but as someone with a wealth of leadership experience, you've seen people play the political game for better or for worse at a lot of different levels. I mean, I'm sure even just right there in the hangar, you had people that played the political game and you're like, stop it. But you've probably also seen those times where you're like, we're going to have to play nice if we're going to win at all. And that may not be the right thing, ultimately, and it may not be the good thing, ultimately, but if we're going to live to fight another day, we're going to have to compromise here. How do you see that philosophy impacting our world today?
Well, I mean, if you want to boil it down just to Granbury, because I'm running for city council and not state senator.
Yeah.
Well, no. But I mean, and it just gets back to the same things that I basically said, is it boils down to the facts and analyzing the facts and trying to take the emotion out of it. I've always been very fortunate. That's one of the reasons why I wound up staying in the Air Force, is because I had great mentors. Not everybody does. And I've had the opportunity to have people that I really respected and really looked up to. And I said, you know, someday when I grow up, I want to be just like you. And it worked out very well for me. So it wasn't necessarily so much playing politics as it was making sure that I was doing the right things for the right people for the right reasons. And I see that as the same thing, whether you talk...
That's three layers of decision making.
Yes.
The right thing for the right people.
At the right time.
At the right time.
Yes. And I'll continue to do that on Granbury City Council.
Is that a personality or a character trait, or is that a skill set?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, that's what I've learned from my mentors, and as I've grown through the years. I didn't start out as a great leader, and I have a lot of people that I still think I'm not as good as they were, but I'm still working towards that. And it's a mindset.
I was 20 or 21 years old the first time I read Becoming a Person of Influence by John Maxwell. Just barely a junior NCO at the time, just got my E4. And it changed the way I looked at the world, because I grew up the only son of a single mom as an abuse victim. And just, you know, if I didn't fight and claw to get my way, I didn't get anything out of life. And so at that point, bringing up Boys by James Dobson, Wild at Heart by John Eldridge, and John Maxwell's Becoming a Person of Influence, those three books literally just changed the trajectory of my life. But I've been studying Maxwell since then. And it's fascinating, some of the things he says, like you've got to get along to go along. You've got to find that way of finding that balance. But that doesn't always mean compromising. And it does mean sometimes listening to somebody else's point of view. And I coached for the Dale Carnegie Program for about 5 years. One of his primary things is always listen in the terms of the other person's interests. Speak in the terms of the other person's interests. Be heard after you've listened first. And those are not natural, especially for young men going into the military, and especially for probably 25-year-olds who are all very self-focused, I was, to get what I want out of the world. What is your advice for young people today who are, whether it's looking at the military as their form of public service or getting their degree and going into public life, what kind of advice do you have for young men today?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, like, which was very successful when I adapted it, was just to find a mentor and a leader that you can look up to and that you can follow in their footsteps. I can remember when I was very young in the Air Force, only had been in for a couple of years, I had this chief that I worked for in my squadron, who I just thought, after I got to know him and after he got to know me, I thought he was the greatest guy I had ever met. And I decided at that point, I want to be a chief. And from that point on, for the next 26 years, I spent, my focus was on, what do I have to do? I know I have to study hard. I know I have to work hard. I know I have to be very good at what I'm doing, my job. But I have to do a lot of the other things. I have to volunteer different organizations and do more than just my job. And that's always been something that I've always wanted to do and always found that it always worked good for me as long as I did that. And a lot of people call that politicking. I didn't think it was politicking. I thought it was providing them another level of public service. And so I would tell you that anybody that is in the military, there's two reasons to go in the military. To get extra training, to get trained for another job that you could use later on in life. A firefighter, I've seen a lot of them that eventually then went on to other fire departments in civilian life. Or a lot of them can go in now for the educational benefits. I went in with a high school diploma and came out with a master's degree in public administration and didn't cost me a dime.
Wow.
Other than a lot of hours and a lot of hard studying.
Right.
And that was just another step in being able to prepare myself to be more promotable, because I was to separate yourself from the other people that you're working with and doing just that little extra bit. And so I would tell you that anybody that does that, and whether they go in the military, no matter where what they do, if they do that in the civilian job, if they do that little extra bit that kind of separates them from the rest of their contemporaries, they'll do well.
It's fascinating you say that, and we could probably talk for about 3 hours on this, because I've been studying leadership now for 30 years. Growing up without a dad or a father figure to speak into my life and go, you need to try this, you need to do, you're wrong, and here's why. I heard stupid phrases like, the rich get rich, the poor go broke, and it's the rich's fault. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to be rich. So even when I had that job where I was knocking on six figures, I would sabotage myself because the inner narrative was a disaster. Mm-hmm. You made an interesting point that even today I have to look at it and go, okay, maybe there's some value to that, because I practiced it, but I would have never put it in the juxtaposition that you did. You said, don't just do your job, look for those things beyond your job and do them too, because that's what separates you, so to speak, from the class. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was sucking up, that was, you know, trying to, but I've always heard people say, well, you know, your selfish ambition is just dangerous. To juxtapose that against politicking, which everybody says is bad, right? You're just sucking up, you're brown-nosing, you're politicking, you're whatever, you're just out for yourself. It's kind of the crabs in a barrel thing, right? I can't let you succeed because that means I'm a failure, so I've got to destroy your attempt at success as well. Obviously, your mindset from early on was completely opposite that. You said a couple of years in the military, you were looking at people going, that's what I want to be when I grow up. Did you have all that growing up as a teenager?
Well, here's my, I guess, my little bit of insight into my early years. My mother died when I was very young, and I was an only child. My father was on the local police department, and so when my mother died, there were about 22 or 23 other officers on the police department. So I had 23 other surrogate fathers.
Oh, wow.
that helped me grow up and kind of guided me and made sure I went down the right path. You always hear people talking about being a preacher's kid. Just be a cop's kid, and it's a whole nother world. But it led to the, I think, my, I don't know if you want to call it that, I'm just structured, and I'm taught to follow the rules and follow the laws. And it's okay to say that this is wrong, and this is, I don't like it this way, but then don't go against it just because you don't like it. Figure out a way to change it. And I think that's more important, and that's what I've always tried to do. I've made a lot of changes in different areas that I've been involved in. But you follow the rules as they are now, and then if you don't like them, you figure out a way to change the rules, and there's a lot of ways to do that.
I remember hearing Laurel Langmire. She's a financial coach, advisor. I was in one of her classes, and somebody yelled at her, you know, I'm just broke. I'll never have the kind of money that you have. And, you know, the whole system is broken. There's no way that, you know, people who aren't rich now will never get rich. And she turned around and she said, I grew up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin. I mean, if I can't get rich, anybody can get rich. And the person said, well, don't you believe the system is broken? She said, no, it's not broken. The system is working exactly the way it was designed. The problem is, it's not to the advantage of those who don't know it. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to figure out what the system is and learn to play the game within the rules. And it sounds like that's very much what you're saying, is that you learned early on what the rules look like, mm-hmm. whether you like them or not. You can either play within the rules that are there and follow the system that's already in structure, or you can get busy changing it, but rebelling against it and throwing a fit like a five-year-old with a temper tantrum isn't going to change anything.
Exactly.
And so I assume then that as you come into politics in your more seasoned years, that you're still looking at that going, that as an influencer, as a leader, that's still the same role that I have. Understand the rules that are there, understand the system that's in place, and make change from within.
Perfect. And, you know, and you mentioned before, you know, I think a little thing about compromising. And I will tell you that particularly when you're in politics or in city council or in whatever endeavor you're in, I think that there's a value to compromising. I'm not saying to compromise your ethics or compromise your standards, but I mean to compromise on issues that you're working on. If I'm working on an issue with you and I go in, this is what I want, you come in, this is what you want, I think it's unreasonable to think that I'm going to get everything I want and you're going to get nothing,
right.
You know? So I think compromise is essential. And certainly in city, in any level of government, people are going to want things done. City of Granbury, for example. And some things are going to be maybe not undoable, but very difficult to achieve. But there's a level of compromise there somewhere in the middle that where you're satisfied and I can be satisfied. The city of Granbury can accomplish it, and you feel like we're still taking care of you.
I think that probably one of the hardest questions that I've watched people try to answer, besides, you know, if you look at all the things in the world that we could fight over, what are the ones that we can have common ground? Mm-hmm. I heard a radio host say it the other day. He's like, if we could just agree on the Bill of Rights, the rest of it we can compromise on, or we can mm-hmm. dismiss, if we can just agree on the Bill of Rights. So let's just get those 10 under a belt that, yeah, we all believe in that. That we'd have a different America if we could just agree on that. But beyond that, there's a whole lot of simply what I want that can't give way. And it, like you said, sometimes it's purely emotionally invested and there's no facts in it. Mm-hmm. It's just what I want. But the most difficult question I've asked people is, what do you want?
Yeah.
And most people know what they don't want vehemently. They have no idea what they do want, which makes it really hard to pursue a future that causes that to come to pass if you don't have any clue what it is.
Well, see, that goes back to what I said before, is that I try to delve more in the facts and not so much the emotions, because a lot of people think they're making decisions based on emotions, but not on the facts. And once I think you can make the facts abundantly clear, people are more willing to compromise or more willing to understand. And I think that's our job, as if you're on city council, is to educate the public on what their issue, if their issue is something that can be fixed or we can do something about, we'll work together to accomplish that. And if there isn't any fix right now, at least explain to them so they understand why it is that way and understand the facts and try to take the emotion out of it.
Very good. Skip, I appreciate you taking time to come by today.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Hey, thanks for watching Lead the Narrative TV. I am J. Lauren Norris, your host. I'm glad that you've taken the time to hop in here. And remember, this conversation was about Granbury, Texas. This conversation has a very small, almost microscopic view. But I don't want you to think that it's a myopic view. All politics is local. And if you're not willing to get involved right where you are, in your school board, in your city council, on the Zoning and Planning Commission, on the local Chamber of Commerce Events Volunteer Board, get involved somewhere. Get a better understanding of what's going on immediately around you. The community you live in needs your input. It needs your opinions. It needs your feelings. It needs your emotions. Why? Because it is your community. It's your home. And if you won't invest there, then what you have to say about what's going on nationally really is not a loud, strong voice. If you want to change the narrative, you got to understand you can either lead the narrative or be led by it. If you don't like the story you're hearing, change the story. I'm J. Lauren Norris, your host of Lead the Narrative TV, and I appreciate you being here today. Have a blessed day.